Hi, podcasters. This is Brooke with Let's Talk Art. Today I'm talking art with Elizabeth Carney of the Akron Art Museum. She's the assistant curator there. We've featured the Akron Museum before. They've always got some great stuff going on. Today we're talking about the Pulp exhibit that Elizabeth curated. It's going on until July 31st. We're still in the process of lining up sponsors for Let's Talk Art with Brooke. But in the meantime, if you're interested in supporting the podcast, please look for my book, Reptiles on Caffeine, on Amazon. Enjoy the podcast. Okay. Hi, Elizabeth. How you doing?
I'm well, Brooke. How are you?
Doing good. I've got Elizabeth Carney from the Akron Art Museum. We're talking about the Pulp exhibit, which she curated. So tell me a little bit about the exhibit.
So the exhibition is curated from our collection. Have also one local loan, but it's really showcasing a variety of photographs and one print from the Akron Art Museum collection. And these are photographs that were taken over the span of 80 years, and they reflect a huge variety of different photographic media and approaches to photography. But the tie between all of these photographs is that they're all photographs of paper. And specifically paper ephemera. So we're talking mass-produced paper products like magazines, mm-hmm. newspaper, and posters that are in most of the photographs, in some level of decay.
Okay.
So that's a very basic kind of material that these artists are then kind of looking at through the camera and creating out of this what is essentially trash, creating
right.
something new that is aesthetically and culturally significant
right.
in their art.
Right. Yeah, I think that's awesome. I think, I love the idea of reusing things because, you know, art paper is expensive.
It's true, and I love paper.
Yeah, I do too.
There's some really, really beautiful paper that is made, you know, by hand and with a lot of love. And then there's the kind of paper that we deal with every day that comes in these, you know, mass reams or that you, you know, get in the mail and you didn't even order a catalog or whatever. So in some ways, it's the cheapest, sort of least appreciated
right.
material sort of in our modern culture, especially where there's so much produced for advertising and for selling, you know, other things.
Right.
And a vehicle for that. But on the other hand, you know, when you think about these actual photographs here in our museum,
mm-hmm.
and these are printed on these beautiful art papers, these photo papers that have been very carefully treated and
right.
Designed to have these photographs printed on them. So then there's that other side of paper, which is this very technologically advanced and carefully made and expensive paper, and it's very valuable. I mean, that's why we keep it here. We keep those pieces of paper with these images that have been printed on them here at the museum, and we invest ourselves in taking care of those pieces of paper.
Absolutely.
So, interesting dichotomy there.
Yeah, definitely. So how did you curated this? Did you think of this, or how did this exhibit come to be?
Yeah, so this exhibition came out of really just looking at some things in the collection and realizing over time that there was this connecting theme that I really wanted to explore through an exhibition. So there are a couple of key photographs in the show. One photographer who I've known about and really cared about for a long time is Aaron Siskind, and he's a photographer who is maybe not in line with a lot of the photographers people might think of today,
mm-hmm.
Where we see the photographs as being sort of these documents of events or places, you know, pictures of things.
Right.
Aaron was really interested in really more like the abstract possibilities of photography. So he was actually friends with the abstract expressionist painters who were working in New York in the 40s and 50s.
Mm-hmm.
And Willem de Kooning actually had a photograph by Aaron Siskind in his studio that sort of helped him understand his own abstract painting.
Oh, wow.
So Siskind was really interested in the photograph as a vehicle to create composition out of line and form and value, darks and lights. He wasn't really interested in taking pictures of things to document the world around him, which a lot of photographers do care about that.
Right.
So I've really been interested in his work for a long time, and he was known for taking pictures of walls, often walls that had these posters or, you know, playbills, things like that, that had been put up and were slowly decaying over time.
Uh-huh.
He would draw out these really beautiful, just abstract textures and shapes out of that decay.
So that's very cool.
So I've always been really interested in his work, and I thought, how can I? But he's really quite different from a lot of photographers in how he sort of treats the medium, and so I was trying to figure out what else in our collection might we show with that photography.
Mm-hmm.
And then I came across some photographs by Richard Mizrock, who is a few generations after Siskind,
mm-hmm.
On the West Coast, as opposed to Siskind, who was working in Chicago and New York.
Mm-hmm.
And he is known for, and he's still working today, and he photographs the American Southwest primarily.
Oh, cool.
And photographs a lot in the desert, and sort of has a huge range of work, but we own a couple of photographs from a series called the Playboy series.
Uh-huh.
And he actually came across, and he was photographing the deserts of Nevada in 1990, and he came across these two issues of Playboy magazine that had been used for shooting targets.
Uh-huh.
So they're shot through with these bullet holes, and they're lying on the ground, and the women on the covers were the intended targets. And he photographed those sort of sitting on the ground, and then he was curious about these actual magazines, opens them up, and realizes that every page throughout the magazines, so the ads, the articles, obviously the pictures of the women inside were all sort of also shot through.
Right.
And this was a very visceral metaphor for cultural violence in America.
Yeah.
But again, there's this very tactile quality of this paper,
mm-hmm.
This paper that has decayed, but through the violent act of people sort of, directing that violence at that paper.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really started to think about paper more in terms of, paper as a vehicle for images and text that we put out in the world, but then also how it's thrown away and sort of regurgitated and recycled, and then it ends up being literally recycled
mm-hmm.
into fresh new paper, and the whole cycle kind of continues.
Right. Right. That's really interesting that a paper can get a new life from like just the trashy, Playboy paper to like just fine paper that that artists work on or penmen work on, and just, I don't know, it can get a whole new life.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's actually a fun sort of a thing that happens physically in the exhibition as you kind of go around the room looking at these photographs that sort of appear in sequence as you're physically walking through the space. There's a photograph by a man named Tom Young who would go to this paper mill where they actually recycled paper.
Mm-hmm.
His photographs are of sort of these reams of paper that's waiting to be recycled, so it's been thrown away.
Mm-hmm.
It's just sort of sitting there out out in the field.
Uh-huh.
But often it'll be paper that maybe didn't even really hit the market or was never really sold, so you'd often find sort of the same photograph repeated like over and over and over, and sort of find these interesting things that were happening with these images.
Right.
Sort of how they happen to be juxtaposed with one another.
Oh, cool.
There's a photograph in the show, and he actually photographed this, like, it's almost a canyon of this thrown out paper, and you can actually see the little, like, business return mailers that you get in the middle of your magazines where they want you to subscribe on this postcard.
Uh-huh.
So see those sticking out, and those are, to me, those are, like, the cheapest
paper,
like, ever wants those.
Yeah, really.
Those, and, you know, we all subscribe to things online now, so.
Yeah, I'd forgotten all about those, actually.
Yeah.
They were really annoying.
They were, and like, you're sitting in the doctor's office, and it's like, really, I don't want to, I do not want to subscribe to this.
Right.
Stop pestering me. Physical spam. You know, and, but it's really, like, the trashiest paper ever, and it's sitting there, and makes, but makes this beautiful kind of landscape.
Oh, wow.
And, but it's also, like, a graveyard for paper in some ways.
Yeah.
And then on the wall right next to it, there's a photograph by a woman named Esther Bubbly, and she was a photojournalist in New York in the 40s, and she photographed a newsstand.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see all these magazines hanging out and newspapers. You can't even see the guy. You can see, like, his arm, the guy who's selling all of the paper. So the person is kind of, like, obscured by all of this, waiting to be sold. So there's an interesting thing that happens in the exhibition where you see sort of where this paper, where these paper products kind of originate, where you might purchase them, and then they kind of end up when we throw them out and when we're done with them and what ends up happening to them.
The life cycle of paper.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. Yeah. Cool. I think that's really interesting because no one would ever think of that.
It's, you know, we don't, in a lot of ways, we don't need to really think about what happens. There are all these systems for us where we can order what we need, and when we're done with it, put it in the recycle bin and it goes away.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, totally. So I was interested in a lot of these paintings. They look really cool. I like the one person. Actually, the one person's story is it Pavel Banca? That's just kind of haunting, and I'm not really sure what's going on there.
Yeah, it is kind of a haunting photograph, and for your listeners, it's this, it's almost like a cocoon shape, but what it is are these layers of paper, kind of making of this vertical shape. And the way Pavel Banca made this photograph was by taking a long exposure over about 5 or 10 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
He was tracking the movement of a person holding, who sort of started squatting down, holding a single sheet of newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
This is actually a newspaper called Rue de Pravo, which is Czech for the Red Right, or the Red Law, a communist newspaper from Czechoslovakia, 1982. And so this person, over the course of 5 or 10 seconds, is standing up, and the photograph is sort of capturing this upward movement. And so you get these kind of different frames layered on top of each other. Newspaper.
Cool.
The photograph is called One Person's Story, and it's interesting because Pavel Banca, and this is when communism was the government structure in Czechoslovakia, and that has now it's the Czech Republic as we know it today.
Mm-hmm.
But in that time, there were a lot of artists who were really outspoken about the communist government, and Pavel Banca was never really outwardly vocal against the government, and didn't really use his art as a political tool or an outward protest tool.
Right.
But this photograph is called One Person's Story, and he's got this sheet of this propagandist newspaper.
Right.
Obscuring this man who's standing up. So as this one person is standing up or taking a stand, if you will, he's being obscured by the communist propaganda. in a lot of ways, that might be reading into the image, potentially argue this because
right.
of this interpretation. But at the same time, he's chosen this title, One Person's Story, or it's also been translated as Story of One Person.
Right.
He is really talking about the individual within the society where the individual was often obscured. By the government.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. And it's a photograph. So is the photo paper, is that that's been recycled or
so the photo paper, probably in most of these, the photo paper wouldn't be actually recycled, especially in the '80s. I don't know really much about the history of recycling actually, so
right.
I'm not sure actually they would have recycled, how much they would have recycled paper.
Right.
But certainly the subject
yeah.
and that newspaper would
yeah.
be yellowed within
right.
a few days.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a picture of pulp.
Exactly. Yeah. And actually, I can say too about this particular photograph. The images that we can take digitally and these digital reproductions that we can show online and things, they're helpful to get a sense of what the photograph looks like and what the subject matter is. But the physical photograph itself is something that I really care a lot about, and its surface is almost kind of silvery.
Yeah.
It's a really beautiful physical piece of artwork, and so to have it, in this exhibition where we have all these different types of photographs,
mm-hmm.
it really stands out because it has a very unique kind of tone.
Yeah.
To it.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So, how did you, what was your curatorial process? How did you pick the pictures for this? Was it just based on the paper, the pulp paper type thing, or was there a larger picture?
Well, it's funny because, the curatorial process for any show, I think, I shouldn't speak for all curators, certainly, but
right.
for a lot of the curators I know, and definitely for myself, it's often sort of a push-pull kind of experience, and often an idea might really change your choice of artworks that you want, and sometimes your choice of artwork changes the idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Those two things kind of help shape each other.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, it's very important that the artwork is something that I always want to start from the works of art
mm-hmm.
specifically, as opposed to trying to squash artwork into an idea that I've had.
Right.
So I mentioned Aaron Siskind and Richard Mizrakin, that I started to see through those specific artworks this possible connection. And I had also been thinking about with Aaron Siskind the fact that his photography was really pulling out this kind of abstract beauty in out of paper. So I had been looking at paper for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And also thinking about abstraction. There are all these different ideas kind of going around in my head.
Right.
And then I'm searching through our collection. We do have a database that is searchable, and we have almost all of our collection up online, and anyone can search it.
Mm-hmm.
So I started looking for things sort of related to paper and related to other ideas I've kind of been thinking about in the same vein, and I ended up with a very long list of possibilities, and then was really thinking about the specific gallery I was going to be installing the exhibition in,
mm-hmm.
and looking at the actual artworks in person, it's very important.
Yeah.
The artworks themselves are, first of all, in good showable condition, which usually is not a problem, but
right.
you always want to check and to see what they might look like together, because for me it's very important that the artwork in the gallery that they complement one another.
Right.
In reality.
Right. So that's cool that they play off each other.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a very important part of this show in particular because this theme is so open-ended in a lot of ways. And I keep coming back to Siskin and Mizrock, but because I've already talked about them, it makes it a little bit easier. But
right.
Aaron and was making these photographs of walls, and he wasn't really thinking about the metaphor of cultural violence in America that Richard was thinking about in his photograph. But when they're hanging on the wall next to each other,
mm-hmm.
the Aaron Siskin photographs, to me, next to Richard Mizrock's photographs, they start to look a little bit more violent, like that decay of the elements against this paper, whatever it was.
Right.
Well, it starts to feel a little bit more violent.
And yeah.
So the theme of violence is actually something I tried to pull out throughout the exhibition and other works as well.
Uh-huh.
Thinking about how, for example, women are portrayed in the media,
mm-hmm.
and what sort of happens, what might happen in a subtle way that artists can sort of pull out in their art.
I think that's a great way to represent that. I think that's a fantastic job.
And I can give one example of that specifically, and that's there's a photographer in the show. Her name is Judith Golden, and this is actually a pretty early work of hers. And she photographed herself, and she made herself up,
mm-hmm.
Did her hair and everything, and took a photograph with part of her face obscured by a page she tore out of a magazine.
Mm-hmm.
So it's got a rough edge. She's torn it out. And it's a partial face.
Mm-hmm.
So she kind of plays the face with her own face behind it.
Ah.
And how kind of odd it is to pair this, like, partially perfect, magazine face to her real face.
Mm-hmm.
And it's black and white photograph that she then hand colored.
Uh-huh.
She's mimicking like the heavy makeup and the heavy airbrushing that happens in magazines. She took this in the 1970s and
uh-huh.
she was trying to make a political statement about how women were portrayed in the media.
Right.
And then on the wall next to that is a photograph by another one by Tom Young where he found in this pile of paper waiting to be recycled. It's called Torn Smiles is the name of his photograph.
Uh-huh.
And they're actually photographs of Mandy Moore
in
like a CoverGirl ad or something like that. It seems like a CoverGirl ad to me.
Right.
Anyway, there are two of them. It's the same photograph,
mm-hmm.
but they're kind of ripped and pulled. And so you see her smile. She has this like really, innocent, cute smile.
Mm-hmm.
But it's ripped and pulled and sort of mutilated.
Oh, that's kind of eerie.
Yeah, and it's very, it's sort of accidental or it's what happened to this paper that's being thrown out. But at the same time, it's kind of like that's what has happened to this image of her.
Right.
And in some ways there is, there are these messages that come through those types of ads and that type of marketing to women specifically. And so putting those together, I kind of wanted to just pull out this, like, what more could we maybe say about this?
Right, right.
What else could we think about this kind of imagery?
Right. Yeah, I think this is a great vehicle for that. That's very creative and just very, who would have thought of it? I think that's really, really creative. Very, very effective too.
Yeah, one of the joys of working with, working with artwork is that, the artwork really sends the ideas. That there are so many. The artwork itself is so rich and This show, you know, I thought about paper and then these other things kind of come to light.
Right.
As you look and compare and think about it more. And in a show like this, where it's a single gallery space, everything is, you know, in pretty close proximity. Mm-hmm. And it's an opportunity to really think about these artists and works of art that wouldn't go together in a history book.
Mm-hmm. Right.
A photograph from 1926 with a photograph from 2006, and those are the earliest and latest
photographs.
So you wouldn't find that in a textbook, but in an exhibition like this, where there's a theme, mm-hmm. finding artwork can really explore other conversations that might, that might emerge
right.
from the work themselves just by being together.
Yeah. Yeah, so the art kind of takes on a life of its own or an exhibit of its own.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's, yeah, definitely. I think that there are conversations happening between these works of art, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's awesome. I think that's really great. So how did you get started in the curating business?
So I actually, when I, I don't know how far back we should go, but the very beginning, I actually started out, I wanted to be an artist, actually, and I ended up picking up an art history,
mm-hmm.
Second major in art history, mm-hmm. and really fell in love with art history,
mm-hmm.
and I had a sense of the making of art because I had studied that for some time.
Mm-hmm.
And after I got my bachelor's degree in art history, I ended up enrolling in a program that was focused on curating the art museum,
mm-hmm.
and an opportunity to really learn a lot about curating from a huge, huge number of perspectives, and I
right.
had the opportunity to meet a lot of people, other curators, people in the field, and to sort of learn more about how people approach this field, which is incredibly varied in terms of how people think about art and how people approach curating and how people think about the role of curators, especially today in a contemporary context.
Right.
That was a really wonderful foundation. I'm always asking, you know, I'm always trying to meet other curators and talk to them and mm-hmm. really just about how we all think about everything.
Right.
So different. And I started here at the Akron Art Museum and have just been, I'm always thinking about new possible projects and new collaborations. But it really all started from just a love of artwork, and
uh-huh.
I think that's really important.
Yeah.
In a field like this, you have to really, really love the subject, and so that's always been the easy part.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
The easy part is loving the art.
Yeah, definitely. Well, that's awesome. That's really cool. So do you have any other exhibits coming up at the Akron Art Museum?
We always have things happening. And actually, right now, we are, we just had a delivery today of artwork for our next exhibition, which is Mark Mothersbaugh. The exhibition is called Myopia.
Mm-hmm.
He's an Akron-born artist, and he's probably best known as one of the founders of the band Devo.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he's an incredibly interesting artist, as I mentioned, from Akron, but he works in almost every medium you can imagine. We'll have ceramics, we'll have sort of sound-based work and visual work. He does these drawings on postcard-sized mm-hmm. paper, and we'll have, I want to say we're going to have 30,000 of those or something.
Wow.
Massive. He's so much artwork and a huge variety. He's such an interesting artist.
Cool.
Not just as a musician, but in other mediums as well.
Right. Yeah, I think Teresa was telling me about that exhibit coming up. I guess I didn't realize he was from Akron.
Yes, he grew up here, and he actually, I don't remember when exactly he moved away from here, but He's one of, you know, a few, there are a few other really famous musicians who came from Akron, like the Black Keys are also from Akron. And
cool.
It's interesting when you learn these sorts of things about.
yeah, definitely.
Those connections, yeah. And then after the Myopia exhibition, we actually have a lot of really exciting things sort of coming up. We have the next one after that is called Intersections, and it's artists who are known as sculptors but also work in two dimensions, so make drawings.
Oh, awesome.
Paintings, and the artists in that show include Judy Pfaff, Mark Fox, and several others.
Yeah.
And I think it's six artists, and you know, really varied approaches, but that should be really exciting.
Yeah.
And many of the artists are coming to actually do installations, and Lindbergh is going to do an installation, which she does with colored thread, which will be, I think, really wonderful and beautiful to experience.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, we're hosting another large exhibition called Turn the Page, The First 10 Years of High Fructose.
Uh-huh.
And Fructose is it's an art magazine.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's a contemporary art magazine. And the artists who appear in that magazine are frequently referred to as pop surrealists.
Uh-huh.
So artists like Mark Ryden, who's pretty well known, and I think that the total number of artists is something like 55 or 60. It's a huge broad range of people.
Uh-huh.
And that should be a really exciting and sort of different exhibition for us.
Yeah.
And, you know, things like the Pulp exhibition were always kind of also thinking about smaller exhibitions like Pulp,
mm-hmm.
that we can use to sort of recontextualize our collection, which is a really important part of what we do,
mm-hmm.
as well. We have these temporary exhibitions, but the collection is also really important.
Yeah.
And we'll always be thinking about how we are showcasing the collection is really important to us.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, this has been so great, Elizabeth. Thank you so much for coming on here and talking about Pulp.
Absolutely. I always love talking about art.
Cool. Cool. Well, I'm going to sign off now, but hang on one second. Thank you so much to Elizabeth Carney of the Akron Art Museum for telling us about the Pulp exhibit. And thank you to you for listening. I know I learned a lot. If you're in the Akron area, check out the Art Museum. They've got a great team making stuff happen. If you're interested in having us promote your product or service, if you have a comment, if you have ideas for future podcasts, or would like to be on the show yourself, please contact me at arttalkwithbrooke@gmail.com. That's all one word, and Brooke with an E. Thanks for listening.